You are listening to the Just One Small Thing podcast, episode number 4. Hey there, welcome back to the Just One Small Thing podcast. This is Nancy, your host, and I'm so glad you're back today. Once again, this is a podcast for Catholic women where I try to round up or share just one small thing, one tidbit of everyday wisdom for Catholic women. And once again, you're stuck with just me for this episode, so I'll get right to it. My just one small thing that I've really been thinking about and wanting to share on the podcast is this. Love is always a choice. Now, I didn't come up with this, but it's something that I have seen to be true over and over again, every single minute, every single day of my life, especially in marriage. I think in many ways, and I've shared this before on my blog and in emails, that marriage is not what I had expected it to be. It's wonderful. It's great. And like any sacrament, there's grace flowing out of it in so many unexpected ways. But I think what surprised me the most is just how often I would have to continue to choose love. It wasn't just on my wedding day, and it's not even just first thing when I wake up in the morning. It's over and over and over again. And I keep thinking, I mean, despite all of this, despite what I've already lived through and experienced, there's a part of me that keeps thinking that perhaps I've chosen enough and I won't have to keep choosing. But of course, then another moment rolls by and I realize that that is completely untrue, that I once again have the ability to choose. And of course, this is exactly what free will is. So a couple of things got me thinking about this. A couple of them are things I've read online, but the biggest one is what I have been experiencing the last couple days. So we unfortunately, which I'm sure you've been through before, had the stomach bug come through our family the past week and a half. We were at my parents' farm for about a week. I have my youngest sister. I'm one of four sisters, and then my youngest sibling is my brother. He's not little. He's a gigantic, like 6.5 foot man, but my youngest sister, Susan, actually belongs to a religious order that's based out of France called the Little Sisters of the Lamb. They're wonderful. They're all around the world, and they actually have a monastery here in Kansas City, Kansas. But anyway, she gets a home visit once every 4 years. So we were all gathered at my parents' farm, all 15 grandkids. We had a great time. We had terrific weather. But as always happens when you're gathered in one house together with tons of kids, is that the stomach bug surfaces. I mean, it's kind of a miracle, isn't it? No matter what, the stomach bug shows up at the end, right? Luckily, the other two families, my other two sisters that have big families, they didn't get sick, but we did. Bernadette, my daughter, and of course, my sister Susan, who's a nun, got sick. She got the worst of anybody. But anyway, so Bernadette brought it home and it went through all the kids, and then it got to my husband. And I love my husband. He's better than I deserve in so many ways, but he is undeniably a man. And now I know, you know, the one male listener that has decided to listen to this podcast, I'm going to make you mad right now and I'm going to lose you, but I love my husband, but he enjoys about 99% of the time feeling awesome, which I am so grateful for. I'm so grateful he has his health and feels wonderful. But like most men, he doesn't experience nausea very often. And when he does, it completely debilitates him. Now, he really was quite sick. But you know, it's really hard for me to be, you know, as sympathetic and charitable as I need to be. And this is completely a flaw in myself. And it's so much worse. You know, we have four little kids. And so when he's laid up in bed, I'm doing all the parenting. You know, I'm always doing it all day by myself. But when it's then all evening and all weekend, yeah, that's hard, you know, and I'm there, you know, bustling around, feeding everyone, wiping everyone's butt, doing everything by myself. And then to go and wait on him to, goodness, wives that can do that, I just really fail. I really do. And, you know, and it's especially hard for me when he's dealing with things that to me is a typical day of pregnancy. It's terrible, but you know, I mean, maybe you also have difficult, I don't even have that difficult of pregnancies, but for me, getting pregnant means accepting that I'm going to feel terrible for 9 months. Or, and that feeling nausea will only start to ease up when I have heartburn so bad I can barely breathe and I feel like a beached whale and I can't sleep on my side anymore. You know, okay, sorry, I'm getting a little bit complainy here. But this is the long story, of course, to justify my uncharitable and bitter behavior towards my husband, who had a terrible stomach bug and was laid up for several days. So that started getting me thinking about this choice and how even all the love, all the appreciation, and all the good things that you can lay down for your marriage in a moment like that can feel so fragile. You know, like, why is it so hard for me to take care of him for a couple of days when he works diligently for us year after year at a job that, you know, is a lot of work and a lot of stress? Why is it so hard for me? So, and of course, you know, having him sick, and of course he had a regular stomach bug, you know, nothing, you know, there was no reason to even go to the clinic. But at the same time, like I mentioned previously on a podcast, I did this survey of married women. And not only did, you know, I kind of asked them just to click on what they struggle with, but I also left the option for people to write me a little bit about their thoughts on Catholic marriage. And thankfully, I think about 300 people took the time to do that. And some people wrote these just beautiful, you know, paragraphs or multiple paragraphs talking about wisdom they learned or even struggles that they're in currently. And one, especially since I was here struggling with being charitable to a husband who has a stomach bug, well, one really put me in my place. And it really made me think about what Catholic marriage is, especially if something unforeseeable or unfortunate happens, like terminal illness or long-term illness. So I'm going to read this. This is totally anonymous. I have no idea who wrote this. And if you're listening and you wrote this, please email me. I want to know you and I want you to teach me a little bit. So I'm going to read. This is what a real person wrote, okay? And I'll read it. Here we go. It says, I have learned the importance of Catholic marriage. You see, I am married, yet I am a single mom. My husband of almost 20 years was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 3.5 years ago. I learned slowly what is meant by those marriage vows that we professed those many years ago. A wise priest would tell us that the purpose of a spouse was to get the other spouse to heaven. Little did I know that my husband was going to lead me to heaven in staying true to our vows. God and my husband are helping me to grow stronger in my faith, stronger in humility, stronger in patience, and stronger in my prayer life. God gives me the graces, especially those received from our sacramental marriage vows, to fulfill my duty to him and to my husband. Okay, wow. Yeah, I'm sitting here pouting in the kitchen because I feel like my husband is acting like a baby with a stomach bug. And I'm forced to think, like, what if, and this could, you know, this could happen to anybody, any of us. What if my husband really was struck down with a chronic illness? And, you know, the way it goes, women generally live longer than men. The fact, you know, I'm in this forever. The whole idea of marriage is that our love is supposed to be based on the love of God, which is, you know, final. It's not ending. So I'm in this, you know, one of us is going to end up burying the other person. That's just what we signed on for. So I'm going to have to take care of him in illness at some point, and chances are I will be the one that lives longer, just statistically. So, and that's hard. Oh, goodness. You know, you don't want to think that I'd be the person to cut and run, but man, hard to continue to choose and to choose even when it's tough. And, you know, I don't really have any, like, magic solution, but just the, I think for me, it has been so powerful once I really realized and embraced that this is a choice. You know, I got married a little bit later than a lot of people. I was 28 when I got married, and of course I felt like an old maid and a spinster. But I did end up marrying a man that I didn't think that I would marry, that type of a man. You know, he's an accountant, and I don't know, I just thought I would marry like a actor or a artist, you know, with, praise the Lord, you know, an accountant has a lot steadier work than an actor. But anyways, you know, love, marriage did turn out differently than I thought it would. But like anyone, and praise God, our courtship and our early marriage was, you know, it was tremendously fun. I married a man that loves having fun, loves being with me, loves talking. And, you know, the emotions ran high. I am an emotional person. I did, you know, have to choose him, but that choice was so easy, and I felt like this is the greatest thing in the world to be able to choose you, and of course it was. But then you get into real life, screamed kids, and you know, 20 pounds of baby weight that just won't seem to go away, and jobs that forced my husband to travel 50% of the time to other sides of the world. And that choice gets to be harder. And it's just all of a sudden you're choosing every single part of someone that you didn't necessarily know were there. You know, like, or maybe parts of someone that didn't really bother you before, you know. Yeah, because I love my husband, but, you know, he has as many idiosyncrasies as anybody. Maybe not as many as me, but a lot. And so, again, with thinking all of these things, you know, about choosing our husbands, I also, this morning, when I should have been doing the dishes, I don't know. You know, do you do this? Do you pick up your phone and all of a sudden you're in an app and you're like, wait, what? I was going to text my husband about this and this, but all of a sudden I'm surfing Facebook. Like, it's terrible. I need to get my phone habits under control. But okay, it's on Facebook, and I'm part of several wonderful Catholic women's, you know, some are just for Catholic mothers, some are for Catholic women, some are about NFP. You know, there's so many great groups out there. Too many. I have no idea how many I'm even in. And in fact, I saw this comment, and I went back just before I started recording this and tried to find it, and I couldn't because there's so many comments and there's so many groups. But anyways, it was a great comment, and I really commend the woman that wrote it because it's so honest. And I feel like it's something none of us want to admit, but we've all been there. And the comment was about this. She said, like, you know, I need help. Have any of you ever been in a situation where you get to the point where every single thing that your husband does is annoying? Where you just, he drives you crazy and you can't get around it, and it starts to come out in your comments, and you start to be kind of snide and cold. And it affects not only the way that you raise your children together, but it affects the bedroom. And I just thought, you know, how many women would actually go and say that, you know, because we don't want to be, you know, witchy women, which unfortunately we can be, you know, we can get annoyed by things, and we can, oh, and I shouldn't say we can, I can. I am a brooder, and I wish I wasn't. You know how you look at yourself, and there's some characteristics you say in yourself that you just, gosh, I just wish I could get rid of that, or I wish that wasn't my personality. But I am a brooder. Something hurts my feelings, and I just take it in. I don't say anything about it, and it starts to just fester, and that inner monologue of, you know, me being the victim and them being wrong, it starts spinning and spinning until I can't really even put my finger on what actually happened. So anyways, I read this comment, and what I was really happy and excited to see, you know, even though I didn't have time to comment because then there was screaming kids and, oh, that's right, a pile of dishes, but what I was amazed to see is that, like, tons of women were there commenting with advice and commiserating that this does happen and that, you know, and really holding this woman accountable to the fact that you need to get on top of this and you need to figure out a way to get around it. And it's so true. You know, we are married to humans, and most difficultly, we are married to men, you know, that don't understand the way things should be done, you know, that it should be done on my timeline, and that this is the list of things that are most important, and your list, well, that's just crazy. But anyways, I was impressed, and a lot of people had good advice, like, you know, sit down and make a list of all the things that you admire and love about your husband and try to really focus on those things, which I thought was excellent advice. And it comes back to this small thing, that love is a choice. And as the word choice implies, being in love requires action. It's not a passive thing, it's an active thing. So like this woman, you know, I think this can happen to any of us if we aren't aware of it. You know, if we just kind of let things slip, we're married to men. We're married to men that are stressed, that have different priorities, that don't understand us, you know, and that are sinners in their own right. It's very easy to get frustrated with them, you know? And if we don't talk about these things, it's easy for that frustration to grow and for it to start to eke out into all the various parts of our lives. And suddenly we're doing things that we would never do before, like bad-mouthing our husband to our parents or being nasty to them when they come home instead of hugging and kissing them at the door, right? These are things that we can easily do. Even when we were married, we thought we never would do them. Suddenly, we're doing them. And that's what happens when we're passive, when we just let these things fester, when we don't get in there and actively start walking in the other direction. So I like that idea of if you get negative on your husband, to really try to reprogram your thoughts, to get into an attitude of gratitude, which, sorry, I hate that phrase, but it's still good. But, you know, to really be grateful for what they are, what they do, be honest about it, and talk to them about it. It's not rocket science, but it's huge, right? To be active in your choice and to know that these things don't just happen. And when you live in a way that expects things to just happen, expects things to just resolve themselves and get better, and you become sort of lazy and passive in your duty to love your husband, bad things happen. I mean, so this is a podcast for Catholic women, so I know in secular world this might sound crazy, but I truly believe that little nagging voice in my ear, especially on concerns with my husband, when I'm feeling overlooked and neglected and misused, that nagging voice giving me all that ammo, feeding, you know, pushing me on, making me think bad about my husband, that's the devil. That is Satan's voice in my mind trying to destroy the love between us. And he's taking advantage of the fact that I am not actively doing anything to reinforce my choice to love my husband. He comes into those moments when we're being passive and lazy, and he exploits them. You know, and not just, you know, the idea that he can get into our minds and start leading us by the nose in a direction that we never thought we would go is totally disturbing. So yes, love is a choice, and love requires action. Now, I've mentioned it before, you know, this whole survey of Catholic wives is to support a course that I'm putting together. The course is for Catholic wives, and it is my attempt, my very humble attempt, to take the beautiful and ever so true teachings of Pope St. John Paul II, what he wrote in The Theology of the Body, Love and Responsibility, which to me, Love and Responsibility is the absolute pinnacle blueprint of marriage. But then also in Family and Sexuality, I might have said that last name wrong, but anyways, in his writings, what he wrote about, you know, marriage, sexuality, and family, and apply it in a way that's practical, you know, with like actual things that we can do today in our marriages, what we can say, what we should not say, things like that, and apply it to marriage. But I think that is the smaller piece of what I want to do. The bigger piece is to have a community of women, you know, and I'm hoping to get a lot of women gathered for this so I can make separate groups. So we can be in a group of women like maybe that have all been married for 5 or less years, or a group of women that have been married for 10 to 15 years, something like that, where we can talk about these things and know that we're talking to other people in the exact same boat as us, and we're also talking to people that believe what we believe, you know, that NFP is hard because they're doing it, but it's worth it. And believe that, you know, marriage needs to be open to children, and that marriage is a sacrament. That is probably the most important thing, that marriage is a sacrament. So anyways, I've been doing tons and tons of research. I've read, of course, the teaching or the writings of Pope St. John Paul II, but I've also, you know, to kind of balance things and figure out a way to apply these things, I've been reading a ton of just marriage literature by lots of therapists and stuff. And some of it is just bonkers, banana crazy. But, you know, a lot of it is good and a lot of it is some good. So one thing I found when I was reading on sex, you know, because that's a huge part, right? You know what? I feel also that's something we really need to create a space to talk about. So anyways, on the topic of sex, you know, lots of good things. But what resonated the most with me was actually this exact same topic and how, you know, deciding to have sex, you know, and we're talking about in marriage here, of course, is such the decision to do that is so different for a man than it is for a woman. And, you know, popular thought, proper psychology, I guess, will kind of depict man to be kind of like animals, right? They need sex in this sort of animalistic way. They feel a sexual urge and they have to act on it, or they're in some way suffocating and stifling who they are. And I don't buy that. I don't think any Catholic that truly knows a priest and knows the power of the priesthood could ever believe that. And also, you know, any wife that goes through postpartum period with their husband would ever believe that, right? We have more respect for our men than that. They're not animals. But they also aren't women. You know, so popular psychology feels like men are animals and that women are basically on the complete other side of the spectrum. And I actually feel like that probably is true. We both want sex for different reasons. You know, men, yes, it probably has a little bit more to do with physical, like a physical urge, the visually seeing, you know, your wife's body. And for women, I think our desire to have sex is probably more, you know, the closeness, the bonding, the affection. And that makes sense. That totally does. But I also feel men want sex for the affection and bonding also. But anyways, so that's all background. What really was like, you know, it's like you finally see it in print, something that you've known. But what he said is that, you know, men oftentimes can get aroused and want to have sex in a second. You know, it's almost like they don't have to consciously make that choice. It just kind of like, I see it, I want it, you know. But for women, it's very different. It requires a deliberate and sometimes like seriously effort-filled decision that we have to seriously be like, yes, I am going to allow this to happen and I am going to open up my body to feel this way. And what's interesting is that, you know, people that have done research on these sorts of things say that in order for a woman's body to even be aroused and to respond to any of these things so that she can have sex, you have to make that choice. You know, a man, you know, like I said, the choice just kind of happens. It's sort of spontaneous. But for a woman, it's so, the mental part is so much stronger. And I bet, you know, I haven't talked to tons of women about this, but I have talked to some of them. And I bet if you're listening, you completely agree. The mental element for women to want to have sex is pretty big. You know, you have to get your head in the game. So anyway, so it's such a choice, a choice. And that was a huge surprise to me when I got married. I'm not necessarily feel like I, you know, like, oh, I wish I'd known that before marriage. I'm kind of happy that I didn't. You know, there's some things you just have to find out. But I think it's an incredibly important thing for married women to really look in the face and realize this is a choice. I'm not like my husband. My husband is different. You know, he can, you know, you can roll over and whisper in his ear and he's ready to go. And for women, it's different. It just is different. And again, I was reading through these comments on the survey I gave of Catholic women, and I came across, you know, it's like whenever I'm feeling a little sorry for myself or something, I come across, God kind of presents a story that puts into perspective like how extreme this choice can be. And, you know, I've known for a long time that sex is an important issue for Catholic women to talk about and to be real about and to actually educate themselves on so that they have the tools to enjoy it, because that's important. And so a lot of people wrote about, you know, problems that they've had in their sexual relationship with their husband, and a handful, I mean, I think like 10, you know, of course, 300 people respond, you know, actually took the time to write a comment, but about 10 of them wrote about hormonal issues to the point where they have absolutely no sex drive, none. You know, and some were situational, like, you know, the hormones of breastfeeding. Others were kind of a permanent thing that they had unfortunately and, you know, to their complete sadness, learned after they were married and had to figure out how to deal with. And a couple of them were really in a terribly dark place about it. But other ones weren't. Other ones talked about how, you know, it was a struggle at first, but they've come to the point where they realize the value of sex, even if, you know, you can't ever climax, that there are other benefits, that there it's worthwhile still to make the choice and show up, and that it's so key to a marriage, even if you can't, you know, reach that sexual height. So, you know, I hope that's not very many women's problem, but I think we all realize that it is a real problem for some people. But yet so powerful to hear even from more than one person to they make that choice, and that it has created many benefits for them in their marriage to the point where they joyfully do it. So anyways, there we go. I'm all over the place talking about how love is a choice in marriage. From my husband being sick in bed to, you know, the marital act. And I don't have any answers. As you can tell from the way that I treated my husband this week, I still struggle. But it's a choice. It's a choice. And I'll be here until one of us is gone. And I just pray. That I can be a charitable wife, but I know that I can't without the graces that flow out of the sacrament of marriage. And thank you, Jesus, for making it a sacrament, because I don't know how I would do it otherwise. I wouldn't. So there you go. That's our episode for today on the fact that love is a choice. Thank you so much for coming by. And I hope that if you have some wisdom to share on marriage and some wisdom on how to joyfully make this choice to love every day, please consider coming by my blog and leaving a comment on this post that's sharing this podcast. I don't have all of the answers, but I would love it if the few answers that you have you could share with, you know, with me, because I need them, but also with other people. Because as I shared in a previous podcast, we Catholic women, we're a force to be reckoned with. And if we really dive in and live the lives that we are called to live, and if we start this movement of through small things, greatness, through choosing to love in the smallest ways every single day, by choosing to hold our tongue, by choosing to bring up another piece of toast to our husband that's lying in bed, by choosing love, choosing to be little, and really embracing the truth of who we are, you know, our littleness, that we can do great things, and by that we can bring about the greater glory of God. So that's the path that I am trying and failing to stay on, and I know you're there with me. So until we meet again, carry on, and I'll see you soon.